is the Midday 180.
Delivered by Edley's Barbecue.
With Jonathan Hutton, Chad Withrow, and Paul Kuharski. On 104.5 The Zone.
Welcome back. We have entered the fourth hour of the program on the Midday 180, delivered by Edley's Barbecue on 104.5 The Zone. Delicious barbecue made by Edley's and delivered by Edley's. Order at edleysbbq.com or call your closest Edley's location. And we are live today from Contract Properties in Bellevue. This is a homegrown, family-owned commercial and residential maintenance company that has served Nashville since 1993. Everything is done in-house and under their name. There are no subcontractors, no third parties. Whether it's electrical, plumbing, HVAC, a remodeling project, even your honey-do list at home, Contract Properties can take care of your needs today. They are taking care of us today. Lonnie Housley, Joey Housley, the entire Housley family. I say this is this in-house, how they handle things. They're in a house here, and it is it would make the perfect haunted house because I feel like there's trap doors everywhere. It's a maze in there. It's hard to find your way out once you get in, and it's a family-run business. There's a Housley on every door in the house, so definitely come see Contract Properties for any of your needs around the house, whatever you're trying to get done. They do literally everything, and a big thanks to Lonnie, Joey Housley, the entire gang here at Contract Properties. Had a great time having some good food right now, too, Paul. It's been fun.
Evan Winter, a member of the All-22, related to the family. And works here. So I had forgotten that. Surprised to see him. The Vikings get a third rounder in 2021 and a conditional fifth in 2022, I believe, in exchange for Yannick Ngakoue, who goes to Baltimore. Baltimore was interested in Ngakoue when he came from Jacksonville. So Minnesota turning that around after just five or six games. And Baltimore fortifying. The Ravens do a good job at that. They're also looking at Dez Bryant for their practice squad, which I don't really get. Was it 2 years ago that Dez Bryant got hurt?
Well, they're going
after one game in New Orleans.
They're going for it. There's no doubt about that. They're going for it. And how about the Vikings basically flipping a house? They make one purchase, then they upsell it to another contender, thinking they might be a contender before the season to get Ngakoue, and then get more picks and send them somewhere else. Scott Corley is the athletics director at Belmont University. He's on the line with us right now. Pretty big day in Nashville. You've got the third, well, actually the second, because the second one was canceled, the final presidential debate between Donald Trump and Joe Biden tonight at Curb Event Center on the campus of Belmont University, and Scott Corley is on with us now to talk about that process. Scott, welcome in. Do you guys just, like, bunker in and decide to not leave the university or your offices when this is happening? I got to imagine it's pretty difficult to get around campus today.
Yeah, today's obviously difficult. Now, when being so close to where the debate is happening within the building is what I mean. You know, we've had to be out of the building for the past couple of days, which is totally fine. We're accustomed now to being able to do work virtually, right, guys? After all this COVID stuff, but. You know, it's still very exciting to have it on campus. Needless to say, there's a buzz. I was on campus yesterday, and it was pretty neat to see, you know, all the signage, all the stuff that goes into getting it ready. You know, so much work, so much time has been put in, and the build up, and now to know that it's here, and it's going to happen on our campus. With so many people watching, it's really exciting.
And I'm curious about the recruiting edge you get with a highly visible event like this on your campus. And this isn't the first time this has happened. Presidential debate between President Obama, Senator McCain in 2008. That coincidentally was the same year that Belmont had that unforgettable tournament game against Duke. So to what extent was that a big turning point for the university in 2008? And how can an event like tonight, with all eyes of America on your campus, help Belmont?
Yeah, I mean, without a doubt, 2008. I mean, between the Duke game and the excitement that generated from the athletic perspective, and the Belmont getting their name out for that, and then you top it with the debate and millions of people watching. There's no doubt that was a transformational time for our university. It really put Belmont on the map, said we could put on very big events on our campus like a debate. And, you know, I don't think it's any coincidence that our enrollment has grown tremendously since 2008. We probably added 3,000-plus students. You know, we're a little over 8,000 now. We were probably about 5,000 back then. And so certainly, you know, you do types of events like this for multiple reasons, but one of them is obviously the eyeballs, the marketing part that comes with it that hopefully leads to enrollment for us in athletics. It gives us another thing to talk to recruits about, to really highlight our campus, to highlight the city of Nashville and all the things that can go on. And the fact that Belmont's playing in the big leagues when it relates to events like this. The other schools that had agreed to host the debate this year were Michigan and Notre Dame. And of those three, we're the only one that kept our word and decided to move forward with the debate. So I think those are things you can certainly use to your advantage. And when tonight there's going to be 70 million plus people all over the country and really all over the world that will be watching this event. And to, you know, when Belmont's name gets tied to those types of things, it can do nothing but help.
Do your people strictly function as helpers? You know, how do we do this? Where do we find that? For the debate commission that's running this whole deal, and then and how few people are involved in providing those services as everybody else kind of gets out of the way.
Yeah, I mean, it's a partnership, no doubt, with the debate commission and in Belmont, and you know, a lot of the planning went back a year ago. So, you know, when it's almost a little bit like when it gets to game time, you know, there's a select few that are really needed, and particularly this year with COVID, obviously that has a big impact on how many people can be there, how much media, you know, is really allowed on campus. More media is probably doing things virtually, stuff like that. But there still was need for, you know, many, many volunteers to help out, just getting the media folks to and from and those types of things. But it's definitely a partnership. You know, a lot of the heavy lifting, though, by Belmont probably been done a year ago up until, you know, yesterday. And then, you know, today it's more getting ready to roll. And once the candidates get here, there's maybe a couple hundred in the curb, and hopefully everything, you know, goes as planned.
How adaptable have, obviously with COVID-19, everything else, your students have had to be very adaptable, but with everything considered, the debate and COVID-19 protocols and everything else, what's this year been like from a student perspective at Belmont?
Well, it's been different, needless to say. I mean, we all know you kind of go to college with certain ideas on what it looks like from a social perspective and meeting people and networking and things like that. You know, so that part's been different. What I can tell you is our professors and students in general have been very, you know, accommodating, understanding. They've been very diligent in following the rules and protocols, and as a result, we've been very fortunate as a university not to have really any significant issues related to that. Now, we're still all holding our breath. We got another month to go before the semester's done, but I have found our students and our student athletes in particular to be very compliant, very understanding, that we all have to make sacrifices to get through this semester, and at the same time, you know, there's only so much you can do socially. So those are all challenges we're all facing in higher ed. But, you know, to have an event like this on campus does, I think, take a little bit of the distraction away from that. You know, we've had to move some kids off campus because of the debate. They were in the inner perimeter. And, you know, I think they get a little change of scenery and things like that. So overall, knock on wood, I'm very pleased with how the semester's gone so far.
Belmont Athletic Director Scott Corley, our guest. Got to ask you a basketball question while you're on with us, Scott. What has preparation for the season looked like? Less than 5 weeks away. Scheduling, how difficult has that been? And also with the ESPN Orlando Invitational, what is that looking like right now?
Yeah, I mean, scheduling has been just very interesting, needless to say. I mean, I'm glad the NCAA came out however many weeks ago it was and said, hey, this is our start date, and let's plan accordingly. But, you know, you went from November 10th starts on November 25th, so you lose 15 days in an already fairly compressed schedule, particularly for non-conference games. So there's been a lot of shuffling, a lot of rejiggering. I feel like we're getting close. I feel like we're about 90% there. With the Orlando tournament, a lot of still moving parts, but getting closer with that as well. And it's not going to be what we originally visioned. Some of the teams that we thought would be in the 18 tournament have dropped out for various reasons. There's still discussion of is it going to be even a tournament format, those types of things. And so still working through a lot of that. What I can tell you from what I know, there's a lot of really good teams that are going to be down in Orlando. And we hope to be one of them. And, hope to start off that first week of the season down there playing against some really good teams. And so I feel like, Chad, we're getting there. We're probably a week or two away. Obviously, the calendar says we got to start finalizing these things. And that's the tricky part. All of us got to just say, all right, are we good with these games? If so, let's go and let's get them signed up and let's get it out there and announce what's going on.
Scott Corley, Athletics Director at Belmont University, has been our guest. Scott, best of luck tonight on what's a great showcase for your university in Belmont. Hope everything goes off without a hitch, and I'm sure we'll be chatting with you again come hoop season.
All right, I hope so, guys. I hope we got a lot to talk about hoop season, but appreciate the time today. We're very excited at Belmont to be hosting the debate and expect it to go off great, but appreciate the time.
Take care.
We're excited for the city, for Belmont, and to watch the debate tonight. Big thanks to Scott Corley for joining us. Big thanks once again to Contract Properties here in Bellevue for hosting us. They've provided food. They've provided drink. They've provided good company. Enormous thanks to Lonnie Housley, the Housley family, Joey, who reached out to us, who wanted to be a part of our Let Us In tour. So we thank them for hosting us today. We've had a great time here at their facility in Bellevue. We always have a great time with our College Football on Adderall segment with Stephen Godfrey of Banner Society. He will join us next. It's the Midday 180 delivered by Edley's Barbecue.
This is your home for Titans football.
Ryan Tannehill! Touchdown! Titans!
104.5 The Zone.
And we are back on 104.5 The Zone. It's the Midday 180 delivered by Edley's Barbecue. Coming to you live today from Contract Properties in Bellevue. Great family-owned company. Big thanks to the Housley family for having us out on our Let Us In tour. If you want us at your place of business or leisure, hit us up on Twitter, at Midday 180. Send us a message. Let us know. Stephen Godfrey is with Banner Society. Stephen Godfrey right now on Zoom. Looks like the saddest man on the planet in his Atlanta Falcons sweatshirt, just staring blankly into his computer screen with zero facial expression as he looked at us. Godfrey, I really hope your mood picks up during this segment.
I'm shocked that you guys think an Atlanta sports fan would look any other way, especially after this past weekend. I mean, Chad, this is how you're supposed to live.
PK had an objection to the way Will Bowling responded to the Braves loss, saying that he was too quick to give up on anger and mourning in light of the loss, and right after the loss was talking about the overachievement of the season. Godfrey, you seem like the opposite of a lot of Atlanta sports fans and a lot of Braves fans. The anger and dejection with that Game 7 loss clearly has not left you yet.
Well, no, I don't think it should. This doesn't have anything to do with the Braves. I don't think that people – I mean, look, this is a bad year for a lot of people, and I'm not saying you need to invest emotion in sports in a way that makes you sick or tired or stressed out, because we've got – everybody's dealing with a lot. But at the same time, this whole I don't even know what to call it. It's like this jump to goodwill, Paul, help me out here, where it's like really, it was a great season. It's not glass half full. It's just sort of a dumb, naive way to look at things, especially in the sport of baseball, which has so many incremental differences. And this idea of like, well, the Braves are set up for the future. And they are. I get that. what was left of that bullpen that went as far as it did, that was remarkable. And they are positioned great to have better pitching in the coming years. However, the team's best and hottest hitter is probably going to walk in free agency. Liberty Media, who owns the team, is not really one to go out and spend like the Dodgers do, like Boston does, like the Yankees do. This is a problem. And also, this franchise specifically is notorious for doing just enough to peter out at this point in the playoffs. So I think you're well within your rights to be mad about that, especially when a base running error cost you the game and you could easily be beating Tampa right now 2-0.
The future is in the future. Now is now, and now you just missed winning Game 7 to get to the World Series. Be upset about that for a good long while before you pull to 30,000 feet. Will Bowling takes a rocket ship to 30,000 feet. Most people, you know, they do the balloons like David Blaine to 30,000 feet. It takes them a long time to get up there before you can finally see it at 30,000 feet. Will Bowling takes a rocket ship. He's up there in 5 minutes.
My issue is this, and I think maybe Paul can, I don't know if Paul would agree with me or not. When you work as a sober, even-minded journalist in sports, you know how many things go into a season's result. You know how many things could potentially go wrong. And so when you get into this worldview, and it could be college sports, or it could be the NFL, it could be Major League Baseball. We did this with the Preds, I think, as a city for too long. And now the Preds seems to be receding, right? Where it's, we're positioned great for the future. We're positioned great with the future. Look, just because you have an 80% chance of winning next year, that is not a guarantee of winning. There is never a guarantee of winning until you win. I'm 39 years old. I've seen one championship for the teams that I cheer for in that time, and that was 25 years ago. So I can tell you what it's like to cheer for teams who are perennially good. Okay, year in and year out, they're good. College sports fans could tell you that. What would an Auburn fan listening to this say? They understand, right? Being good is of a particular threshold, but at a certain point, you are allowed to be mad that you are not transcending to the next level.
Bravo.
It reminds me of what a buddy of mine said, talking about karma in sports and karma in college football, and he had a great line about Auburn. He said, karma does not exist if Auburn is allowed to exist in college football with the success that they've had. I thought that was beautifully said. As long as Auburn and Cam Newton and some of their success exist, then karma does not exist in college football.
I want to pick up on this transcending to good. A lot of us saw Mike Leach's first game and thought there's going to be transcending to very good. And you wrote in the last week, it transcended to Mike Leach being Mike Leach.
Thank you, Paul. It was a wonderful segue. This year, as crazy as it is, and we have so many mitigating circumstances that are going on in the sport of college football, kids, you know, entire position groups being sick with COVID, the rescheduling that caused Mississippi State to play the defending national champion in week one. The bottom line is this. This is about as normal a Mike Leach season on the field as you could ask for. The problem is, I think we've all misinterpreted this because he's suddenly in the SEC and we thought it was going to be different. At first, we thought it was going to be terrible. And then he beat a team that turns out not to be very good because they had a massive amount of roster turnover, a questionable hire at defensive coordinator. And now they can't score touchdowns. And this seems like we're going to have a referendum and people on the SEC network can beat their chests and say, the air raid doesn't work in the Southeastern Conference. Well, as I wrote in the article, the air raid worked effectively and wonderfully in the Southeastern Conference almost 25, 30 years ago when Guy Morris was at Kentucky. We've already had the air raid in the Southeastern Conference. I think maybe fans don't know that. Maybe I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt. I don't want to be as mean as Paul is sometimes. But this Mike Leach experience is exactly what Mike Leach does, almost to the win and loss pattern at Washington State, at Texas Tech. And yet we feel a need, because it's the SEC, to create these big referendums every week.
It's funny about the referendums every week, and you're spot on with that, Godfrey. Let me ask you this about Tennessee football. In terms of referendums, I'll go ahead and ask one right now. In the hierarchy of program problem, just a big quarterback problem, or it's 2020 in a COVID-19 year, and every week in the SEC, something wild and crazy is going to happen. And this was simply the wild and crazy thing that happened last Saturday. Where do you put Tennessee's 34-7 home loss to Kentucky?
It's really bad. And I have preached patience. That's what I've said. I try and create a theme when we talk about the same things week to week. I try and be consistent in messaging, especially Tennessee. It's a long view approach towards improvement, towards what y'all expect, which is 1998 or the ability to reach that. This loss to me is not devastating in that I think it's going to change the program next week. It was a severe blow to the credibility of the progress, if that makes sense. To me, and I've said this on the show before, it makes better sense. It's more logical for what Jeremy Pruitt is trying to do if they go out and they just simply aren't as talented as Georgia or Alabama or even Florida this year, hypothetically, okay? What is not acceptable is to be they weren't out-schemed against Kentucky, Chad. It was as if they did not complete the task. It was as if they did not show up to work in terms of the game plan that they had. I don't know if it was installation. I don't know if it was the call specifically on defense. I don't know what exactly caused such a fundamental breakdown for a position coach to be fired during the game. This is the kind of loss against this particular opponent that calls all of those referendums back to the front of everyone's mind, which is, when can Tennessee reestablish its credibility regionally before it goes nationally? When can Tennessee be understood as a known quantity? And what I mean by that, that's just a fancy way of saying Tennessee won't lose to Kentucky, Vanderbilt, Missouri. They won't lose those games they're not supposed to. They would go in and beat an Arkansas. They would go in and compete with an A&M. We consider them out of 16 teams in the league to be number 4 or 5 or even 6. The problem is the inconsistency. That loss specifically, and I think the way they lost the game and the way they looked, I watched the whole thing. It was shocking to me because I honestly feel like I'm a pretty strong judge. And I was starting to buy in of like, well, you know what? Pruitt, he's developing the consistency and everything else will come afterwards. And this is sort of like a cousin to the Kirby Smart methodology. And they both come off the Saban tree. What I saw was as bad as BYU and Georgia State.
I think you put,
wow.
I don't put BYU in that category, but I'm with you, Godfrey, on this. Each of his 3 years, he's had one inexplicable performance and loss. I put the Vandy loss in year one, where both teams were playing for a bowl game and Tennessee looked completely disinterested and got outplayed in every possible way against Derek Mason and Vandy at the end of the year. Georgia State, clearly, in year two, was that game for them. And now Kentucky in year three. And he talked about the loss of the perceived development of the program with that loss. Is the only way to gain that back now to go out? They're not going to beat Alabama. Everyone knows that. But to go out and beat A&M or Florida at home and to win a game like that to get back some of that credibility?
I think COVID shortened year, context. I feel like I got to say the same thing every week. With the time that you have remaining and the inevitable loss that you're going to have this weekend, the best thing you can do, Chad, is probably sandwich a win against Arkansas and a win against Auburn, because in the comparative sense of talent and I would even say schematically, Tennessee should win those games. If you could pull an upset of A&M, that would be as much of a sort of clearing the register and narrative and perception as you could probably create. But what I've just said, that's really hard to do. And it's not something we've really seen this program do. So, yeah, is it possible? Yes, I just don't have any reason to believe it will happen.
So the return of the Big Ten this weekend, is there anything in particular you're looking forward to see, Godfrey? And I'll bring up an example. We know about Alabama and Clemson right now in the fight for a national title. I want to see Ohio State because there's a lot of talk about Ohio State being that third team in the mix. What specifically do you want to see this weekend?
Well, if you're a fan of the Big Ten, you've had a chance to sort of kind of beat your chest morally, right, and establish all of these terms about how we're going to do it different. The bottom line is you got bullied into being here, so now you're here. And here's what I can predict. A lot of the same things that have happened in a football sense because of the uncertainty of 2020, they're going to happen to the Big Ten the same way it happened to the SEC and the ACC and everyone else playing right now, and the Big 12 for that matter. So what I mean by that specifically is you're going to have an Arkansas and you're going to have an LSU. You're going to have a team that should be, by all rights, completely dead or in development or so far down in year one or year zero as a program, and yet they're going to jump to life because of the mistakes made by a team that doesn't have consistency. On the top end, you're going to have a team or a program where you feel like, hey, they should be a contender for the league title. They should be someone who would vie for a playoff spot. And I don't include Ohio State in this because I do really feel as if they are of Clemson's caliber this year. But you have a Michigan, maybe. Penn State is one that everyone is talking about falling apart. So the games I'm looking at right now, you know, before the COVID thing hit the Braum family, I really thought Purdue going in, Iowa's had a ton of problems off the field, and they sort of pride themselves on how boring they can create in that culture. That's it. That's a program under siege that people aren't talking about. Indiana is very, very talented at the skill positions. Penn State is really not, or at least relative to their own terms. I think you're going to see upsets. And the one that's going to be really weird, I'm just going to go ahead and call it now. Mel Tucker got hired by Michigan State in February. He's a recruiter. He's an SEC mindset guy. He's energy. They were a 7-win team last year before D'Antonio resigned. This is not an overhaul. This is not one of those things where he has to resurrect a culture. They're going to come out and hit someone in the face in the first 3 weeks.
This Chad being interested in Ohio State, when they happen to be playing Nebraska, who's popular in his house, and it happens to be, what's the spread on that game, 40?
No, I'm interested in seeing if they can compete with Clemson. They're going to kill Nebraska. I'm interested to see if they're good enough to compete with Clemson and Alabama more than anything else. Here's the other one, though, Godfrey. Notre Dame's third in the country. What is Notre Dame? Because that's not a team anyone talks about for anything, even though they're undefeated and third in the country.
Yeah, and thank God for that, because we're finally disabusing ourselves of the notion that they somehow occupy a space that is special or different in relation to a program like an Ohio State or a Clemson. They are not an authoritative undefeated team right now. Okay, let's be honest. They're playing an amended ACC schedule because they have to with what's going on. This is as much a fraudulent Notre Dame team as anything that Brian Kelly trots out there. And the reason why I say fraudulent is that they don't come out and say, hey, we're going to win football games. They come out every year and they message this. They message this through a network deal. They message this through the bias that's inherent in three generations of living sports writers. They message that they belong with Alabama and Clemson. And what happens? Hey, class, what happens every time they play one of those teams?
A boat racing.
Eaten into the curb.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And it's just interesting that, and I think you're right, Godfrey, we've suddenly changed our, not perception, but I guess talking points on Notre Dame over the years. But it's amazing to look up and see them at number three in the country. It's also always amazing, this is shameless plug time, to see Stephen Godfrey with a new podcast, Split Zone Duo. What can you tell us about it, Godfrey?
Yeah, so the name comes from a joke in coaching that I've heard for years, and I don't even understand it. Like, I embed with a lot of teams, and so it's a very fun thing to do, but when you get to sit in those rooms, it's like all of a sudden you walked into a 500-level college class for, like, a foreign language you don't speak. And so there's this joke that exists in the world of schematics called split. Basically, it's an offensive line setup, and people always try and trick each other in the coaching world by saying split zone or duo. So it's a very inside joke. One of my co-hosts, Richard Johnson, is a big scheme guy. He's on the SEC network on Thinking Out Loud. And so I'm kind of bringing more of the gossip into it and more of the coaching world, that kind of, you know, people getting paid under the table, LSU, et cetera, all that. And then we kind of counterbalance that with some, you know, deep dives into schematics. And the only thing I can sell you on the show is we're probably going to talk as much about Florida and Clemson and those type of programs as we are what's going on in Nevada or why UNLV made a better, you know, hire than New Mexico, because I believe those things inform the next 2 to 3 years at the bigger programs. That's kind of how the chain works.
Speaking of next 2 to 3 years and bigger programs, which one is Hugh Freeze going to be coaching at?
Oh, God. All right. Look, every week I worry about swearing on the radio, and every week you put me in an increasingly worse situation where I'm going to end up swearing on the radio. Let me say this. I've never heard of a personal reaction, and they'll deny this, but that's fine because I have a pretty good record of proving that the SEC lies. Greg Sankey has a personal loathing of Hugh Freeze. High-ranking individuals in Birmingham have a personal loathing of what Hugh Freeze did to the credibility, not so much of the University of Mississippi, but to the Southeastern Conference specifically. The details and the level of venom that arose with the NCAA enforcement, the committee, and two different institutions basically trying to murder one another, that was put on Freeze's shoulders in a lot of circles, a lot of circles. I don't think he has the equity he's trying to tell everyone that he does. And I'm going to tell you exactly what Hugh Freeze is doing right now, because I know the man really well. And I'm not, this is the kind of stuff I'm not supposed to say, but I'm going to go ahead and say it because this is Hugh Freeze and he deserves as much as he gives into the college football community. He's also a professional liar, so we might as well go ahead and disabuse these athletic directors of what they're getting into. The man can coach ball. He understands offensive schematics. He's going to recruit well, wink, wink, but he is going to work in misinformation. He's been doing this since he was fired. There was a year, and I won't name it specifically, but there was a year in which he tried to have everyone in the national media convinced that he was about to be the next OC at a bunch of major programs. And the one common link was all of the head coaches of those major programs were repped by his agents. When you went and actually asked people at those major programs, hey, are you talking to Hugh Freeze? Is Hugh Freeze going to be your next play caller? Are you going to have this embattled former head coach on your staff as a potential cancer? What everyone said personally was absolutely not. Hugh Freeze is in the self-promotion business. He will continue to be. I expect Liberty to continue to win. And this is going to be a mistake that someone makes in the next year or two.
Stephen Godfrey always bangs hats. And Godfrey, once again, the name of your new podcast that people can download and listen?
Split Zone Duo. You can check it out on iTunes, Stitcher, pretty much anywhere you find a podcast.
We'll talk to you next week. Hopefully not about the Braves or Falcons.
No more Atlanta for a while.
Pump up Falcons!
When we come back for our final segment of the show, did Jeremy Pruitt, in fact, fire his defensive line coach mid-game? We will discuss. It's the Midday 180 delivered by Edley's Barbecue.
What was scheduled to be a bye week now has your Titans facing Ben Roethlisberger and the Pittsburgh Steelers. Come on, this one should be easy. Big Ben no longer has Ramon Foster protecting him. We do. Kickoff is Sunday at noon on your home for Titans football. 104.5 The Zone.
Final segment of the Midday 180 delivered by Edley's Barbecue on 104.5 The Zone. Huge thank you to Contract Properties for hosting us today. We've had a great time, been outside all day, beautiful weather. Contract Properties, homegrown, family-owned commercial and residential maintenance company that served Nashville since 1993. Everything is done in-house and under their name. There are no subcontractors, no third parties, whether it's electrical, plumbing, HVAC, remodeling. Even your honey-do list at home, Contract Properties, they can take care of your needs today. These guys can do everything. Big thanks to Lonnie, Joey, the entire Housley family for hosting us today. We've had a great time.
Lucas has done a nice job in studio. This is the first time he's produced us, but he's playing the bump music. It's kind of an EDM show, and he's bobbing his head to it. And Lucas, your job is to appeal to our audience, not your audience.
So you're saying that he needs like some glow sticks
or something? You may speak.
Lucas, you big EDM guy?
So who are you appealing to with that music?
I thought that you could just roll Ryan Albany's right under the bus right there. That was a great opportunity to say, you know, Ryan's in here too. Ryan's the one playing
there
the music.
There you go. Fast learner. Lucas, a fast learner.
Ryan looks like a guy that would have glow sticks in one of those silent discos. He'd be one of those guys.
Every time we go this direction, I just picture the opening act for Arcade Fire at one of my worst concert experiences,
right,
which was a giant koala bear.
We had a reference.
Spinning records.
We had a reference yesterday to the behind the parking lot in the Antioch Kroger. That's where I imagine some of these silent discos take place. Just go to the back entrance of the Kroger.
What is a silent
at 3 a.m.?
Oh, this is where you put on the headphones?
Headphones, and it's completely quiet.
It's a funny concept to look at. I would like to look at it. Kirby engaging us in conversation while we're wearing headphones once again. Kirby, so we had a big water spill here. It was the wind's fault, really, but I should have my water bottle snapped closed, though there is a little hole anyway that water would have come through. The guy over here serving food snaps to attention.
Joey Housley.
All of us are jumping. Kirby sitting over there talking. Doesn't move. Doesn't move. Electronics at risk. Doesn't move. Including some of his. Clocks.
Clocks.
Modems.
Hold on. Clocks. Plural.
Two.
Kirby's got two clocks.
If anyone wants to know, it's right 12:48 and it's also 12:48.
12:48:58. 59, and it's 12:49 on both clocks.
Both
right now.
Clocks, yeah. One clock.
I told you should take
person.
A picture of this setup with both clocks.
Yeah. If Hutton was here, he would also have a clock. One man per clock. Clock per man.
The poll question would be simple. One too many clocks? Yes or no?
What time is it?
One too many clocks, yes or no? All joking aside, Kirby's done a nice job.
No, he hadn't.
It was a rough start
for
Kirby.
It was a terrible start. And since then, now we have a new promotions person. This poor guy's had
Junie.
To listen to Kirby.
Junie.
He's learned the first chapter of Kirby's life story, Junie. Junie, if you're out, there are never-ending chapters that you're going to learn. You're allowed to get up and walk away, go find work, jump into that street full of traffic over there.
Go find
on
work.
On Old Hickory Boulevard. We've had interns do it before, production assistants.
We're across the street from McKay's bookstore.
Yeah, you can
music
go in
store.
There, buy books.
You can go in there
CDs.
And find work. I'm sure they got some stocking of shelves to do in there, maybe too. By the way, more props to Lucas, who's producing for us today. He's also works in promotions. He's been out on remotes with us. Lucas does a much better job of the in and out with Kirby, right? He gets in for the quick conversation, then he's out doing something else, the back and forth. Junie is content to sit right
Junie's
here and
new.
Talk
yeah,
to Kirby.
Just taking,
he can't get
shrapnel.
Away from Kirby. It's a timeless art of knowing when to engage Kirby, the right amount of conversation, and then to know when, okay, the conversation's going south. Here is where I exit stage left.
Kirby, when he finally did
I'm great
come
at
over.
Getting away from people.
Yeah, me too. I just walk away.
And I'm very pleasant about it.
I go,
oh, great. Thanks. See ya.
Yeah. I sometimes I'm not
I do
even
it to
polite.
Family members all the time.
Away. Okay, Chief.
Yeah, you're just mean about it. I'm good about it. I can make someone feel special while also getting away.
I don't need to make you feel special. I'm just out. Kirby, when he finally did come over, he asked if it was tea or water that spilled.
30 minutes after
he's responsible for this. He lets some people draw on it with crayons, and he has no problem if they draw on it.
Amateur hour.
But if I spill tea, I'm in trouble. But other guys, he lets draw on it with, as you would say in the South, ink pen, as opposed to other kind of pens. But I leave one notebook out here in the sunshine to dry, and Kirby thinks he's helping me. He's picking that up and giving it back to me. I'm like, no, you buffoon. I've got it down there drying in the sunshine.
The best is when Kirby, within 20 seconds, when we sign off here in 3 minutes, within 20 seconds, I'm going to be trying to gather myself and get doors and everything else, and he is going to be picking things up and is this yours? Is this yes, I'm going to grab it here in the next 30 seconds.
A theory on the Titans that one of my 22 espouses.
We love you, Kirby.
That I tend to believe. I don't. in a game like this, one side breaks, and strong offensive team against a strong defensive team. One side breaks, and it's rarely close. Somebody's thing works, somebody's thing doesn't, and you see a game where one of the two, the defense or the offense, wins it. And so the Titans score a bunch or the Steelers keep the Titans down and win it. What do you think of that kind of thinking?
See, I just think that the problem with that is the Steelers' offense has been really good too. They play bad defenses, but it's not like it's either or. Steelers have a really good offense and a really good defense. Titans have an exceptional offense and a bad defense. So if you're just looking at matchup, you would expect the Steelers to win, if I'm going as simplistic as that, right?
Yes.
By the way, also, in the last minute here, Jeremy Pruitt fires Jimmy Brumbaugh. Matt Jones, Kentucky Sports Radio, reports it happened during the game. Austin Price refutes that account. Austin Price, Brent Hubbs, will join us tomorrow. So we'll ask him about that to see exactly what happened. But I think it's easy to say that something emotional happened. Whether it be during the game, right after the game, it was, I think, a culmination of a lot of different issues with Jimmy Brumbaugh that reached the peak. in that loss to Kentucky.
Your belief and led to a fire. Is going to be out of here after this game.
Well, Jimmy, go get your stuff. If you don't like how I'm coaching, go get your stuff.
Kirby, go get your stuff.
Huge thanks to, should I thank Kirby or no?
No.
Okay. Huge thanks to Junie in promotions.
Junie got it done.
Big thanks to Lucas Panzica.
Lucas definitely got it done.
Also, Ryan Albanese getting it done. Big thanks, special thanks, most important thanks today to Contract Properties in Bellevue. Lonnie and Joey Housley and the entire Housley family, this family-run business, they get it done. They bang hats. They can get it done for you. These guys do everything when it comes to your contracting needs. Electrical, plumbing, HVAC, remodeling, whatever it is, they can handle it at Contract Properties. We're back tomorrow from the Titans locker room store. Paul, on the way out, do you have a message?
On your way to the locker room store or wherever you're going, don't block a box. And tonight, be sure to lock those locks.
We always knew Blaine Bishop had the largest NFL Rolodex in town. I've got Rolodex envy. And now after years of asking, he's opening it up just for you 2 hours a day with guests like LaDainian Tomlinson, Jeff Diamond, and Roman Harper. Blaine and Mickey, I promise we're not doing this just a name drop. Today from 1 to 3 on 104.5 The Zone.